Greetings and welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us. We'll be joined in just a little bit by Gab Marcotti and Shaka Hislop. Juventus not only scored, they won a game as well. We'll also be joined by Sid Lowe and Julian Laurent. Plenty more reaction to Real Madrid's critical but controversial victory on Sunday. But we begin the show in England. Monday's lone Premier League match saw Manchester City roll Burnley 5-0 the final score. Burnley couldn't fill out their bench thanks to players on expiring contracts. The result means City remain comfortably in second place. Also means Liverpool won't be able to clinch on Wednesday when they host Crystal Palace. Craig Burley, Ian Dark, join us for more. Craig, I'll start with you. City's depth on full display in this one. 8 changes from the team we saw against Arsenal didn't seem to make much of a difference.
No, Sebi, and I know I didn't sit down on the sofa when this game started and thought that, you know, City were going to slip up or it was going to be much of a contest. Even with Burnley with the full team, it is usually going to be a struggle. But for all the reasons you mentioned, it was pretty simple. Look, one of the things I always say when I talk about Manchester City and I see a Manchester City team sheet coming out, I look at the bench. And I've always said they've got a bench that would walk into, you know, 90 to 95% of the teams in the Premier League, if not other leagues around Europe. So it is a squad that's had its problems this year. But for them, this pandemic and this shutdown has allowed some of the injured players to get fit. We've seen Leroy Sané back, although he's not going to be at the club for too long, you'd imagine. We've seen Aymeric Laporte back, although he was on the bench today. So he's able to rotate it. And no surprise, bring in quality and even bring in some quality youngsters like Phil Foden.
Ian, we like to talk a lot about City's depth. No better example of that than Phil Foden has a couple goals in the match today.
Yeah, I think he's a terrific player. I really do. And I don't think, honestly, I mean, one hesitates to criticise a coach as brilliant as Pep Guardiola, but I'd like to have seen him have more starts. I think he's only started about 8 Premier League games, including tonight. I mean, you look at that compared to Jadon Sancho, who left Manchester City for Borussia Dortmund to take his chance in Germany, become a big star. He's in the England team, while Foden has been on the back burner. But I think this boy can really play. I think he should be in the England squad right now. I think he will be in the European Championship squad next year. And the interesting thing is David Silva is leaving Manchester City, and this is the acid test now. Pep Guardiola's been talking this boy up right the way through. Now he's got to put him in the team. If they go out and buy somebody to replace David Silva, what does that mean for Foden? So I really hope he is now fast-tracked into the team for next season.
Ian, did we see the best of City or the worst of Burnley today?
I think Burnley have got nothing much to play for, really. You could say they could go for a top half finish, but they're kind of marooned in the middle of the table. The interesting thing, just to underline Craig's point, is that before this restart of the season, Manchester City didn't bother with any friendlies because I think they thought, well, there's not any opposition, really, that could be better than having an in-house training game between our whole squad. So that's what they did, and they've come out flying, really. And remember, their big aim this season now is to win what for them is really the Holy Grail, to win the Champions League, and they're already ahead against Real Madrid. That tie will resume 6 months after it started in August.
You think this is the year they can finally break through?
Interesting thing is with Manchester City, the word going around in English football circles was that they weren't going to be as up to speed as some of the other clubs. Well, I think that was a smokescreen because they'd come out playing really well as if nothing really had happened to them and as if the whole lockdown period hadn't happened. They're playing very well. I think they've got as good a chance as anybody. I wouldn't put it any stronger than that in the Champions League because Bayern Munich, especially to me, look a very, very good team at the moment. And I think I'd make them narrow favourites. But it's all speculation. I'll tell you something. I wonder whether this August competition, where people are playing one-offs like a little mini tournament, whether that might catch on as an idea, as a climax to the Champions League for future years. You wouldn't rule it out, would you?
No, absolutely not. Let's focus on the war of words, shall we, for a second, between Paul Merson and Jose Mourinho. It has to do with Harry Kane. Craig, I wonder your thoughts. Effectively, the case that Merson makes is that Harry Kane has to look elsewhere if he wants to find that ultimate success. Jose Mourinho comes out, lists every striker he's ever managed and every goal that that striker has ever scored. He may have messed up a little bit on the stats. Does Merson have a point, though?
Well, I didn't see exactly what Paul Merson said, but I envisage it's to do with having success. And the bottom line is, and I saw Jose Mourinho trot out all the players and stats from Milito to Ibrahimovic to Ronaldo and others, who all scored, you know, a lot of goals for him. But what you should remember is at the times those goals were scored, those particular clubs were either dominating or close to dominating not only the domestic leagues, but European football. And what we have here is a player who is on, you know, the shortlist for most of the top clubs to be the outright number nine, probably the first in line behind Robert Lewandowski. And here we have him at a club who are a long way off success by the looks of it, who are not playing a very enhanced style of game, and that's been seen since Jose Mourinho came in. And I don't doubt for one minute, and I've seen it in his body language and before the lockdown, that Harry Kane looked dejected in some games because Tottenham were playing so deep. So you can rattle off all these names and all these goals, but those were clubs that were having success. Tottenham at the moment are going to be lucky if they even get a sniff of the top four. Never mind challenging Liverpool and Man City. And that's the big issue for Harry Kane going forward, particularly at his age. He's at his prime and he's got a big decision to make, I think, in the next few months.
Ian, Mourinho had all the stats to back up his argument. What do you think?
Yeah, they weren't accurate, though. I think he gave Drogba about another 113 more goals, but I think he quoted his number of appearances under him. But anyway, leaving that aside, of course, I mean, I'm just thinking that the lockdown must have been agony for Jose Mourinho because he went 3 months without being on the back pages. So here he is. He's done a press conference that's going to put him back on the back pages tomorrow, having a spat with a high-profile pundit like Paul Merson. But it's just Mourinho being Mourinho, really. I mean, all those players he quoted, they've got goals all through their career. And Harry Kane will get goals all through his career as well, once he's up to speed again. I think he's got 7 in 10 games under Mourinho. He'll keep scoring, but Craig's right. Next season is going to be interesting. If Spurs misfire again next season, Kane's already been on the record as saying he isn't going to stay at Tottenham for the sake of it. His quote, watch movements, I'd say.
Ian, we opened the segment starting about Manchester City, the team they faced to kick things back off. Arsenal, it seems like everybody on this show has had their chance to tee off on Arsenal. You actually broadcast that match. What did you see from Arsenal?
A lot wrong, really. The mentality, I think, is wrong. They got into that spat with Neil Maupay, blaming him. And I think it was just the frustration boiling over. There they were with a quarter of an hour to go at Brighton, leading. It looked like the points were in their pocket, but they found a way to lose the game. So Mikel Arteta needs some heavy backing, I think, in the transfer market. He really does, to get this club up to where they want to be challenging for Europe. I mean, this is two defeats since they came back. Okay, anyone can lose at Manchester City, but not many people lose at Brighton. Arsenal badly needed to win that one. Now they've lost their goalkeeper. They've got a stack of injuries. They need to go out and buy in the summer, but I'm not sure, I'm really not sure whether Arsenal have the spending power to do that.
Craig, you might say it's easy to pick on Arsenal, but they give you so much to choose from.
Well, we're talking about Arsenal Football Club in 10th place in the Premier League. It's just not acceptable. I agree with Ian. I think he needs to be backed heavily, but I don't think he'll get it. And I think there's a big question mark over his success going forward as an Arsenal manager or as a manager. He's a very inexperienced person in that particular role, although he's been about football all his life, but so have many, many people. Look, how do you sell it to Pierre Aubameyang, who there's been lots to talk about him potentially leaving? How do you sell that club to him when he's, you know, around about, what, 30, 31, and he's going to have the next 3 or 4 years, he wants to really push on? How do you sell where Arsenal are going to be? The signing structure and the signing policies at this club have been a shocker over the last few years, an absolute shocker. They've made some of the poorest decisions out of all the top clubs around Europe. On top of that, they've got a soft sell to the squad, to the team, to the spine. And then on top of that, as Ian mentioned, they've got an injury to Leno, who's a very experienced goalkeeper. Their next game's coming up. They're away at Southampton. They play Norwich and squeezed in between. They've got an FA Cup quarter-final at Sheffield United. It's a big 3 games for them. Lose those 3 games, and they are right in the mire. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because I'm not convinced with this squad of players, to be quite frank. They're a million miles off challenging for the top four, which is what Mikel Arteta said when this restarted. We still have a chance of the top four, not a snowball's chance.
All right, thanks to Craig. Thanks to Ian. Plenty more from the boys on today's edition of Extra Time, where we take your questions straight off of Twitter. If you got one, hashtag FC Extra Time. After a couple goalless draws in the Cup, including a loss in the final against Napoli, Juventus returned to league play with a 2-0 victory over Bologna on Monday. Ronaldo from the penalty spot and Dybala the goal scorers. Juve now 4 points clear of Lazio, who have a game in hand. They face Atalanta on Wednesday. Gab Marcotti, Shaka Hislop join us for more. Gab, it was Juve's best performance since the restart, although admittedly, that's not really saying much.
Yeah, it's not much of a sample size, and as you said, the first two games were rather poor from Juve in the Coppa Italia. But here, they were very professional. We saw them with a more rational lineup, with Paulo Dybala playing through the middle, Douglas Costa on the bench, Bernardeschi joining the front three, and Cristiano back to where Cristiano likes to play. I think they were also helped a little bit by the fact that Bologna came at them, you know, sort of rather swashbuckling, as if they had nothing to lose. I think that played into Juve's hands a little bit. But they played very well, and certainly Dybala scored a tremendous goal. Ronaldo with his penalty earlier. And they managed the game well, and they were efficient and professional, and, you know, showing a lot of the traits that perhaps we hadn't seen in the two Coppa Italia matches.
Shaka, what did you make of the Juve performance?
I thought it was good, especially considering the disappointing games we'd seen from them so far. Gab's right. Bologna didn't offer much of a challenge, particularly going forward. And the swashbuckling, as it may have been, I thought it lacked any real ideas, a front three that spread out across the park, and didn't really test Bonucci or De Ligt in a manner that you would hope. Listen, I sit here and I admit I've been very critical of De Ligt, particularly in the past. But I thought he equipped himself well, as did Juventus. And they made easy work of it. And the one thing that Juventus does is when they get the noses in front, they're generally hard to beat. And that's what you saw from them. Especially what you saw over recent weeks. You take this every single time.
Gab, reports recently of a dust-up between Pjanic and Sarri. Sarri has come out and said it's a hoax. Pjanic in the lineup today. What do we make of it? Something there or no?
I mean, there's no question Pjanic hasn't played particularly well, and I think a lot of people put two and two together, and they talk about, you know, contractual issues, or they talk about interest from Barcelona. I don't see necessarily why it should affect you on the pitch, and from Juve's perspective, it's pretty clear that, you know, if they get a replacement, they're not going to stand in his way of him leaving. So I don't necessarily buy that, but it's pretty obvious. I mean, look, the midfield's been one of the poorest areas, probably the poorest area of the pitch for Juve in their games back. And Pjanic he's the pianist, right? He's the guy who conducts the whole midfield. So obviously it's going to fall on him. So while Sarri went out of his way to sort of, you know, minimize these stories and, you know, pour water on the fire, as you expect, I would hope that they had stern words and said, hey, look, we're not getting the job done. You know, Pjanic, what can you do better? What can I, Sarri, do better to help you in terms of the players who are around you and what happens in front of you? I don't think Pjanic's poor performances are entirely Pjanic's fault, but equally, he did turn in poor performances, and perhaps Sarri in the two games that, you know, in the Coppa Italia didn't exactly help that.
Shaka, we mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo on the score sheet. He gets the penalty. Look, he hasn't looked like himself since the return to play. How'd you rate his performance today? And did you see any signs of life, any signs of that old Ronaldo?
No, on this performance, not that much. And it's clear. He's still trying to get himself up to speed. But that doesn't concern me as much as maybe it would or should under different circumstances. If Juventus were chasing Lazio, for instance, or they didn't pick up 3 points today, then all of a sudden I think alarm bells start ringing. But we always said from this lockdown, as it happened when it came, nobody knew what the other side would look like. And also, if you think of Ronaldo's own form over recent seasons, coming off of pre-season, coming into a new season, generally, he doesn't start that quickly, and he picks up, and it's the second half of the season where he's at his best. So, again, though we were in the second half of the season, we're coming off a lengthy break, and Ronaldo quite clearly hasn't hasn't found its full stride yet. That for me is less a concern. There's still a few weeks to go between Juventus and entertain Lazio, and that's when you need him at his best. Right now, Juventus, look like they continue to chain up wins.
Gab, so much talk about where Ronaldo plays today. What'd you rate?
I mean, he was back in his usual position. Dybala was playing center forward, whether you want to call it false nine, because he moves around a lot. It's up to you. But ultimately, in this system of play, you need a central striker who's going to make the right runs and who's going to, always look to try to favor the midfielders bursting forward and making those runs into the box. And equally, this system of play, it really benefits from having a guy popping up at the far post to finish. And that's what Cristiano Ronaldo does. So I think, he was more in his natural habitat. I agree with Shaka, and Sadi alluded to this as well. He's not at the fitness level that he wants to be at in terms of match fitness and match sharpness. But I'll tell you what, he's going to get there a whole heck of a lot faster if he does it playing in the position where he's best at rather than having to play center forward.
Gab, change gears real quick. Milan 4-1 winners over Lecce. Just a huge result for Milan as they try to get into the Europa League, and they do it without Zlatan.
Yeah, and look, I think they're going to have to live without Zlatan, next season, and it can't all be about Zlatan. Huge result, as you said, Samu Castillejo getting on the score sheet for the first time in I think more than a year for Milan. Took the lead, gave up the equalizer. But then they pushed on and they hit them three times. Rafael Leao getting on the score sheet. That's certainly very important as well. I was never as doom and gloom as people said in the past. I think Milan still feel that they're in with a shout to move up the table and maybe have a go at that Europa League spot. And certainly away to Lecce is one of those places where you expect them to get the 3 points if they're going to do that.
Gab, Shaka, thank you very much. Plenty more from Gab over on the website, Marcotti's Musings. Make sure to check out this Monday edition. Another reminder, ESPN Plus, your exclusive home for Serie A action. Great slate of midweek matches starts Tuesday over on ESPN Plus. Hellas Verona and Napoli. Then on ESPN at 1:25, the start of a doubleheader. Got Spal Cagliari and Genoa Parma. Wednesday, more of the same. 1:30 on ESPN Plus. Inter against Sassuolo. Roma against Sampdoria. And then on ESPN, the big one, Wednesday afternoon, Atalanta and second place Lazio, just 4 points back of Juve.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
La Liga has a new leader, Real Madrid and Barcelona, even on points. Real Madrid holding the head-to-head tiebreaker, though, with 8 games to go, very much reflected in the new title odds. That, of course, after a hugely controversial 2-1 win over Real Sociedad on Sunday. Sociedad has a goal disallowed. Both Madrid goals shadowed in controversy, you might say. A penalty drawn by Vinicius. Karim Benzema's now world-famous shoulder, the press in Catalonia. Having a field day with it. Conspiracy theories abroad. For more, we welcome in Sid Lowe and Julien Laurent. Sid, I'll start with you. I guess it's no surprise to see the Catalan press responding in the way that they did. What other fallout have you seen from around Spain?
No, you're right. It is no surprise. And I must admit, I normally find this kind of thing so incredibly tiresome. And during the game last night, watching the way that people were reacting on social media, I did find it incredibly tiresome. And I thought, ah, here we go again. And then there was a little bit of me this morning thinking about this and thought, actually, you know what? Maybe this is a good thing. Maybe after everything we've been through over the last 3 months, maybe this is a sign that we're getting back to normal. The fact that we're prepared to confront each other and have arguments and accusations and accuse people of cheating and accuse the referees of being on the side of one team or another, and that everybody is inevitably in the same trenches that they were always in before. Maybe that's the beginning of a certain new normality.
Jules, you with your Barcelona ways, did you see it as scandalous as everybody else did?
Not even just if you're not, even if you're not pro Barca, I think there was a lot of controversy in that game, from the Casemiro yellow card, who I think should have been red. You could argue over the penalty. You could argue over the goal that Yan Uzay scored for Real Sociedad that was disallowed for Mourinho's position, if you want. And then the Benzema shoulder, arm, whatever. It was great. I agree with Sid. I think this is the perfect scenario for La Liga and Tebas, for example. You can keep building up that title race. You've got another game, another week of games. Barca at home against Athletic Bilbao, hell of a game. Then Real Madrid against Mallorca the following day, and you go again. And this is just perfect. This is exactly what we all wanted. And that controversy will forever be there when you've got that kind of rivalry between the two clubs.
Sid, let's focus for a second on the handball or lack of a handball. It really depends on which laws you're following, either the present laws or the future laws. Which rules are they adhering to in Spain right now?
Well, look, the answer to this, and forgive me for saying this, is that there isn't really a proper answer. Okay, so as you will have seen today, a lot of people, there's an image circulating of a picture of a mannequin where it shows that the shoulder is not handball and anything from the rest of the arm down is. And that's the rule that comes into force on the 1st of June. Now, of course, we've passed the 1st of June, but that was the rule that was due to come into force on the 1st of June before this pandemic happened. In other words, the assumption would be the season has finished. This comes into place in time for the Copa America, in time for the European Championship. So it is not being applied, officially speaking, it is not being applied to La Liga now. The problem is, of course, that all the referees have seen this. And one of the problems that we have, and I've been talking to a referee for the last half an hour or so about this, is it was quite nice actually to hear him sort of agree with me, is that we've reached the point where there's so much kind of technocratic interference that referees almost don't know what to think now. So they've seen this. They know this is coming. But in theory, right, let's not apply it now. So in theory, a shoulder, well, that's still a handball, and in the Champions League it would certainly be. But in Spain, there's been a kind of encouragement to get ready for the new year. So look, officially, this rule is not in place. And yet, and I love this because I always feel like when I'm told this, this is the phrase that justifies everything and justifies absolutely nothing at all. The final kind of parting shot from this conversation with the referee was, this is one of those that is interpretive and is down to the referee. And I thought, great. So that doesn't help us in the slightest.
Jules, did you think it was a handball?
I mean, after the goal that Benzema scored against Valencia, I would give him any goal, you know, with his bottom, with the bottom of his shoulder, whenever. I mean, he deserved anything, to be fair. He could ask for anything. We would give it to him. What I had an issue with, and we talked about it with Gab on the pod this morning, I think the referee should have gone to the screen and see by himself exactly, you know, what had happened. Or maybe he had a great view and didn't need to, but I think this one was so important as well to go 2-0 for Madrid that maybe he should have gone and have a look and decide by himself instead of having the VAR people telling him that it was okay.
Sid, a shame we don't have Stevie Nicol on the show to celebrate Sergio Ramos, now the all-time leading scoring defender in La Liga history, and he's made 20 consecutive penalties. What more is there to say about this guy?
Yeah, I mean, whatever we say, we can say it very loudly to try and annoy Steve as much as possible. And I think one of the things about the penalties, by the way, that's worth probably noting is that to start with, when he started taking the penalties, there's a bit of a sense that this was a bit capricious. You know, this was a guy who wanted to rack up some goals. It probably wasn't the right decision for him to be taking penalties. But I think you'd struggle to find anyone at this level of football, in elite football in Europe, to have scored 20 in a row. He takes them very, very well indeed. Quite a lot of Panenkas, very cool in front of goal. And you know, he's just had a fantastic career as an attacking defender. It's true, as Stevie always says, that there may occasionally be some defensive doubts about him. But he has that incredible ability to come good at the stage of the season that really matters. And this time around, it looks like he's doing it again.
Sid, a little bit more reaction from this. Real Madrid manager Zinedine Zidane has come out. He said it was a deserved victory and that he's kind of annoyed every time Madrid gets a win, the attention turns to the referees. Does he have a case to be annoyed?
Well, I think he does a little bit. And actually, I share what he says, not so much because it's about Real Madrid, but I kind of share what he says. And I realise that there's a contradiction here and that here we are talking about this. But I share what he says in the sense that certainly in the Spanish context, in terms of the media reaction in Spain, in terms of the fan reaction in Spain, it can be quite frustrating how often the focus is drawn towards the controversy before the play, how often that is what kind of takes everybody's attention. Also, I mean, bear in mind, of course, that Zidane as well as being Real Madrid manager, has an institutional role to play. So, of course, after the game, when he's asked about these decisions, he's going to say, well, as far as I'm concerned, that's not the point. The point is that we won on the pitch. I want to talk about the way we play. There is one small flaw in Zidane saying I'd much rather talk about the football, which is that Zidane very rarely engages, not at least with any depth, in questions about how his team's played. But, of course, he's going to say that. And it reminds me a little bit of the other conversation from last night. You've got Mikel Merino, who, of course, was deemed to have been interfering in the offside goal. And he's standing there and he says, well, look, the goalkeeper can see it. It's definitely not interference. There's no problem at all. And Courtois is standing next to him, just off camera. And Courtois there kind of nodding. And the interviewer says to Merino, well, Courtois says it was definitely interference and it was right that it was given offside. To which Mourinho responds on air, live on TV, well, what's he going to say? Of course he says that. And in a way, that's kind of the point, isn't it? We're in that kind of circular thing where, well, what are people going to say? You know, they all have a vested interest in this.
Jules, Madrid have had their say. Barcelona have had their say as well. Piqué has come out and hinted, not said, but hinted that Barr is helping Real Madrid. Setién kind of supported Piqué. Is that sour grapes?
I mean, again, I think that's part of the game. How many times did we have Sergio Ramos complaining in the very same way, moaning after Barca got decision going their way? Let's not forget that over a length of the season, they really level up between them two, I think. But often, as well, Barca had those kind of games and performances and the referee having decision going their way. And then that's Sergio Ramos moaning towards Barca. And then when it's Real Madrid's turn, it's Piqué, usually the spokesperson, moaning towards the decision that the referee just made. This is it. And again, that's the scenario that we like. That's what makes also this season so special. And again, that rivalry between the two is so important.
Sid, we open the segment looking at the title odds. Barcelona have Atletico Madrid and Bilbao in the next 8 days. This title race, you could make the argument, might be over in a week, couldn't you?
Yeah, and of course you were talking there about Piqué, and obviously what Piqué was saying was hinting at some of the refereeing decisions that are going Real Madrid's way from his point of view. But I also think that there was more to it the other night when he said after the Sevilla game that I think it's going to be very difficult to win the league now. I think he was having a go at his teammates as well. I think he was having a go at his team and saying, we are not good enough if we play like this. He said, I can't see Real Madrid dropping points. We've just been unable to beat Sevilla. And I think he already feels it's over because he feels that Real Madrid will not drop any points between now and end of the season, and it's out of Barcelona's hands. But as you rightly say, it could well be that after those two games, which are probably the hardest two that Barcelona have left, with perhaps Villarreal as well, which I think comes a week afterwards, those are tough games. I think Barcelona always looked at this next kind of four game run and thought if they could get through Sevilla, Atletico and Athletic and still be on top, they would win the league. But they're not on top anymore, and I suspect that gap at the top might even expand over the next week here.
Jules, an overstatement, an exaggeration to say Barcelona's situation right now desperate?
No, not desperate, because you still level on points. So it could just be one draw for Real Madrid somewhere. And if you win, then you go back to the top. But I agree with Sid. I think right now Real Madrid are a better side. They've got better performances in them than what we've seen Barcelona, who lost De Jong, by the way, for a few weeks now. And I just, right now, I just see clear favourite for Real Madrid without a doubt.
Thank you, Jules. Thank you, Sid. If you want more Jules, a reminder, the Gab and Jules podcast back as ever. On today's edition of the show, they're joined by the one and only Frank LeBeau.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself, too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Thomas Meunier has played the last four seasons at PSG, but the 28-year-old Belgian appears on his way out and reportedly to Borussia Dortmund. Julien Laurent still with us for a little bit more. Meunier on his way out of PSG. What kind of impact do you think he'd actually have at a club like Dortmund, Jules?
Well, they wanted a replacement for Achraf Hakimi, who's going back to Real Madrid. He was only on loan at the club, and they needed a right back who could also play wing back, depending on Dortmund, if they play three at the back or four at the back. And I think in Meunier, on a free transfer as well, it's a no-brainer. Of course, he can always improve defensively, but going forward, he's pretty good, as we've seen in Paris in the last four seasons. So they nailed that one a few weeks ago. We reported it at the time on the ESPN website. There was an attempt from Jose Mourinho, if you remember, not so long ago during the lockdown, who called Meunier directly to try to convince him maybe to say no to Dortmund and to come to Spurs. But I think Meunier really fancied the idea of discovering the Bundesliga and going to play for Dortmund as well in what is an exciting project.
Jules, this situation is somewhat similar to Timo Werner's. Would Meunier stick around at PSG for the Champions League or leave early?
No, he will leave early. The club tried to keep him for the next 2 months, to just extend his contract with a mini contract, if you want, so he could play in August in the Champions League. And Meunier, mostly because he had already the agreement with Dortmund, and with in Germany finishing the season on June the 30th, that means that they will start the pre-season at the end of July probably, or some point over there, and then start in August probably training. So he would have clashed really with what Dortmund wanted him to do. So you can understand his position, and it's a similar thing for Edinson Cavani as well. So it's a shame for Paris not to have Meunier there, although he might not have started. We don't know the quarterfinals, but at least he would have been another body in the squad, could have proved important if there were some injuries, but he decided not to take the extension.
Looks like Dortmund also in the driver's seat for the services of Jude Bellingham, the 16-year-old. Manchester United after him, Chelsea after him, plays in the Championship with Birmingham City. Jules, for those who haven't seen him play, what kind of player is this and why is he so highly sought after?
Oh, very exciting kid. He's born in 2003, so of that generation, he's certainly the most talented of his generation, not just in England, but I think in Europe, or at least one of the most talented players. He turns 17, as you said, on June the 29th. And Dortmund seems to have run that race. It's a race that involved a lot of teams, that they've been chasing him, following him for a very long time. He's had a very good season with Birmingham in the Championship, in what is a very, very difficult league physically, especially. And if you're 16, can you just imagine? And yet, he stood his ground really well. He's a midfielder that can play pretty much everywhere in midfield. He's creative. He's quick as well. Technically, he's very gifted. He's got a good vision. He's a very intelligent player as well. And I think it was a no-brainer for anyone really interested. You had to pay the 30 million euros for someone who's 16. So that's a lot of money for a kid. But what we've seen from him in the Championship this season with Birmingham, and it's not over yet completely, that I don't think there's many doubts on how far and how high he can go.
Speaking of English teenagers in the Bundesliga, Jadon Sancho, I think we've always, Jules, kind of just assumed he would leave Dortmund now. Is that assumption still safe?
I think so. As long as someone pays the fee that Dortmund wants, it's always the same. Dortmund wants between 100 and 120 million euros, which is the price, really. Pandemic or no pandemic, this is how much you would pay for a talent like Jadon Sancho. Whoever can pay that, I think, will get him. Of course, Manchester United, because they've been talking to him and his agent for a longer time, they seem ahead of everybody else. But if they're not ready to pay that money, the move won't happen. Or if they try to get the fee down, that's not going to happen either. They will have to wait another year maybe, and Sancho could stay for another year in Dortmund. But if someone comes up with the money, I think he really feels that for his own progression and improvement, he needs to go somewhere else and get a step higher, maybe coming back in the Premier League, for example, or go in a bigger club, no offense to Dortmund. But so it'd be very interesting to see. But again, it's all down to the money. And I think we saw how beneficial going to Dortmund was for him as a young kid. You think that Bellingham chose Dortmund as well for the same project and the same idea, and one could replace the other.
All right, thank you, Jules. Whether they are buyers or sellers, Dortmund sure to feature prominently on the Transfer Talk portion of our website over the coming months. Bookmark it today and don't miss any of the breaking news this summer. Don't miss tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Dan is back. He'll be joined by Frank Leboeuf, Ale Moreno, Casey Keller, and Stevie Nickel. Barcelona, Spurs, and Atletico Madrid all in action. Should be a good one. Also on our website right now, an article from Graham Hayes. The National Women's Soccer League's Challenge Cup will have one less participant. The Orlando Pride are pulling out after a COVID-19 outbreak within the team. All the details in the article written by Graham. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone involved. Sid Lowe, Julian Laron, Gab Marcotti, Shaka Hislop. Right now, though, it's time for Extra Time with Ian Dark and Craig Burley. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of Extra Time. We got Ian Dark, we got Craig Burley, and we have your question straight off of Twitter. J.R. Little, first on the list, asks, please have either attempt to tell me something positive, I think he's trying to say here, about Arsenal, because I've got nothing. Ian, something positive about Arsenal for our man J.R. here.
Okay, let's go into an imaginary parallel universe where Stan Kroenke says, you know what, I'm fed up with Arsenal slipping off the pace. I'm going to put millions of pounds into the club. I'm going to give Mikel Arteta the backing he needs to really do some major surgery on the squad. So, I mean, if you're an Arsenal fan, you probably don't believe that because the Arsenal fans call him Silent Stan. So, but that's what they've got to hope, because it's going to take that, I think.
Next question from Tio. Nicolas Pepe, Bergwijn, or Christian Pulisic? Who are you taking, Craig?
Let me just backtrack to give Arsenal some positivity. You've got a great stadium. There you go. The one that you built so that you can compete with the biggest clubs around Europe. Yeah, and all that. Pepe scored a great goal the other day, but as we've seen fleeting glimpses of his talent. Bergwijn's a strong runner. I don't know, to be honest. I would probably say Pulisic at the moment. If I wanted a performance, I think I might get a bit more consistency. Why are you laughing?
Well, you're kowtowing to the American fans here. I know you don't like to make enemies online.
I'm really not bothered. I, as you know, I make friends wherever I go. I really couldn't give a stuff about any fans, to be quite frank with you. I'm just saying, Pepe's been fleeting. Bergwijn scored the odd good goal, but I think all round at the moment, you know, Pulisic is arguably none of them. There you go.
All right, make nobody happy. Okay, somebody asked about the video that's been going viral recently. It's Craig going blonde from the BBC at the 1998 World Cup. We want to know, Craig, did you lose a bet? Also, did you make your team meeting on time in the BBC video? You're running late.
Yes, I did, and I can't believe the BBC have put that out, because it's very embarrassing, all the silly things you do when you're in your mid-20s. I did lose a bet after one of the games, the Norway game, and we were having a couple of beers, and I did lose a bet, and I said I would do it, and I'm a man of my word, so I did it. And I got back to the team meeting, and let's just say, when I walked in the room and all the guys were sat there, and the coaches and the manager, there was a few choice words, put it that way. Apart from the fact Alec Miller, the coach, said to me, and his deep, gruff, bloody hell, big man, you're going to have to play well with a haircut like that. And I didn't. I got sent off.
Of course, the whole Romanian team, didn't they? But dyed their hair blonde at that World Cup. And that was when we said, when they went out, that the blondes don't always have more fun. Did you have more fun, Craig?
No. Well, I got a cup of, a hot cup of tea before the rest of the boys, because I was back in the dressing room before the final whistle, as you well know.
You were brave. You were brave with that haircut.
Silly.
Ian, what's the biggest bust-up you have seen after full-time?
Well, the one at Brighton at the weekend was a fair old one, but it's got worse than that. I was at that game when the Millwall fans tore up Luton Town's ground in one of the worst bits of hooliganism I've ever seen, where they kind of ripped almost every seat out. In the bad old days, we don't see that anymore. Hopefully, well, not very much anyway. And that was frightening. In my days covering boxing too, I saw a few riots break out. One of them at Madison Square Garden when Riddick Bowe was fighting against a Polish guy called Andrew Galota. And they had about 150 police cars outside Madison Square Garden on 7th Avenue that night. And they had to smuggle us out. So that was a bit scary too.
Craig, David Luiz or Dejan Lovren?
Oh, God.
David Luiz when he was making less mistakes, if indeed that there was ever a period. But yeah, I think it's a tough choice, but I think I would because I know I'm going to get mistakes from Dejan Lovren too. But I'm also going to, from David Luiz, I'm going to get something else from set pieces, free kicks, and I'm going to get some good passing out from the back. But I'm going to get mistakes from both of them, so I'm taking David Luiz. And by the way,
all right, a history question here for you, Ian.
Hey, let me tell you, I was playing a game. Talk about Millwall. Ian mentioned Millwall from the fans. We lost to Millwall in a penalty shootout in an FA Cup game years ago at Stamford Bridge, and the Millwall fans come all over the hoardings and on the pitch at the end of the game, just as the keeper was making the last save. But previous to that, the previous year, I think it was, we were playing at Millwall's new ground, and before it was about the 90th minute, and there was police horses on the pitch, up in the corner of the pitch, because it was all kicking off, and Dennis Wise chipped the ball into the corner to waste time and gave me a blast in the ear for not chasing after it. And I said to him, oh well, you've not seen the police horses in the corner then, because I ain't running up there. So I've seen, you know, whenever, I don't want to denigrate Millwall, but they seem to have been involved over the years in quite a lot of that kind of stuff.
Ian, our resident historian, the next question's for you. 1982 Italy against 1998 France, and then 2010 Spain against 1970 Brazil. Who wins those one-leg semifinals, and then who takes the final?
Well, okay, so the 1982 Italy team of Paolo Rossi, 1998 France with Desailly, and of course, more notably than that, Zinedine Zidane. So I'll go the France 98 team win that one. I think the great, the brilliant, the wonderful to watch Brazilian 1970 team win that other tie. And in the final, the 1970 Brazilian team with Pelé and Jairzinho and Gerson and Tostão, Clodoaldo and Rivellino, they win the game in spectacular fashion. There you go.
Craig, who was better in their prime, Shevchenko, Rush or Stoichkov?
I'll pass, and I go off to I defer to Ian, because I don't know, because they were all great players in their own right. I mean, Stevie Nicol, our colleague, played with Ian Rush at Liverpool for many years. He was a great goal scorer, as was Shevchenko. Stoichkov was a marvellous talent. I don't know. I don't like these questions where, because they're all great players. You can't pick and choose between who was better at what. They all had different facets to the game.
Ian, Craig doesn't like the question. Can you help him out?
Well, I don't like the question much either. He's right. It's hard to compare great players from across eras. I did like Stoichkov's kind of feisty, explosive side. He was always good to watch. Shevchenko was wonderful, you know, particularly for Milan. In that European team. But maybe because I saw more of Ian Rush. What a goal scorer he was. So if you want an answer, I'd go Rush.
Craig, how do you feel about this question? Should Raul Jimenez pursue a move to a European giant? Juventus seems as it would be his most likely destination. Or should he continue to build his resume at Wolverhampton and stay to make himself a club legend? If Wolves qualify for a Champions League spot, I think he stays. That's from Jerry S., which we all know is also my burner account.
Well, I think there is an argument to say that if they do make the Champions League and they're in the hunt, that could well persuade them to stay. Look, the other side of the coin is how far can Wolves push the envelope? Because we've talked about this, as you well know, many, many times, Seb, is at that stage of his career now that he's got to make hay while the sun shines. And so he's got some big decisions to make. Of course, Wolves are not one to lose him, but, you know, he's got to see what's out there, who's interested in him, and how Wolves finish the season. So I think it might come down to how Wolves will finish the season could determine whether he stays or leaves potentially in the summer.
Or after Ian, you think we'll see him back at Wolves next year?
Do you know what? people underestimate how ambitious Wolves are. They really want to make a big impression in Europe. That's why they fielded their full team from July in the Europa League, even in the qualifiers. They want to win that. They'll think now that they can finish in the top four. I mean, they've got this terrific winner, Traore, who changed the game at West Ham. Jimenez is a wonderful striker. I know Manchester United are interested in him as well, but it wouldn't surprise me if Wolves, especially if they make the Champions League, and they could, hold on to him.
Craig, last question for you. What city in Scotland has the thickest accent?
Well, it's pretty thick in Glasgow, which is about an hour north from me, from where I was brought. Actually, where I come from is a pretty thick accent, the sort of South Ayrshire accent. This is not the South Ayrshire accent I'm speaking with, Seb, because you wouldn't understand the South Ayrshire accent. So it's been... This is a developed, you think I understand you now? This is a developed... Well, clearly you do, because you've answered the question, so don't be so dumb. So this is a refined accent now, which you've got it. I've had to do because I've lived away for like 30 years. Glasgow speaks definitely to Edinburgh because they're on different coasts. I would say you're then looking at Dundee, but arguably Inverness or Aberdeen up in the north, or as we like to call them, the Chuchters. And they, even us Scots, sometimes have to go, sorry. You know, when the Aberdonians start, fit you then. Now, I'll give you an example. Derek Ray is your prime. There he is. He's a prime Chuchter. Now, he doesn't speak with an Aberdonian accent at the moment because he's also refined his for cultural reasons. However, if he doubles back into it, you've not got a chance. It's also a well-known fact. You're going to learn something every day. The farther north you go in Scotland, the tighter they are. They don't like spending any money. They don't like going to the bar. They won't buy a drink. Derek Ray, he's not here to defend himself, but he'll take it on the chin. He's a prime example. When he goes to the bar, he's usually got a set of skis on so he can't get there, or he's got the big long top pockets, or he's screwed on the short arms. One of them. Whatever it is, sewn the pockets up, forgot the wallet, or have to pop up to the room, need to go to the bathroom, who's round, is it? Further north you go in Scotland, trust me, nobody's buying you a drink. Down south, in the normal areas, people are more normal. Trust me.
Ian, what do you have to say to that? Nothing is refined if not Craig Burley's accent, yes?
But I'm absolutely amazed at what I'm hearing here. That was Craig Burley doing a character assassination on people from Scotland. Now, I've always had a bit of a soft spot. I mean, it's a beautiful country up there. The climate's a bit on the harsh side. But the accent, and I'm bow completely to Craig's knowledge of where the accent is the most indecipherable. But usually, most things are lost in translation. Of course, Craig's now developed a very nice Connecticut little twang to his Scottish accent, which is much easier on the ear.
Yes, a Connecticut twang, the first time we've heard that here on ESPN FC. All right, that'll do it for Extra Time. Craig, Ian, thank you very much. The boys will be back tomorrow. Dan Thomas is back. Plenty more coming your way this week on the show.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.